Oh, I would imagine he was very unhappy. What might make him happy? It was an era of great tension, of the possibility of being arrested at any moment, which was ultimately realized. I don't know what was going on in his mind, and I don't know that anybody does.
What would you like to make your documentary about?
I came across a story not too long ago. This is a reenactment of a meeting I had with the man at Radio 4. He was drinking vinegar out of a small glass Wellington. I was leaning forward over his desk and talking directly into his ear.
What's this story you speak of?
It's called The Plummeting Old Women. I slid it across to him, and as I slid it, I caught a glimpse of a couple of lines. I smirked. I love this story.
I've not heard of it.
It's lush.
What's in the suitcase?
It's my favourite story, by a distance. It's only half a page long. He looked at me through his specs.
A doc? About this story?
Read it.
Who's it by?
Read it, man. I moved out of his face and he gave it a read.
The Plummeting Old Women. A certain old woman, out of excessive curiosity, fell out of a window, plummeted to the ground, and was smashed to pieces. Another old woman leaned out of the window and began looking at the remains of the first one, but she also, out of excessive curiosity, fell out of the window, plummeted to the ground, and was smashed to pieces. Then a third old woman plummeted from the window, then a fourth, then a fifth. By the time a sixth old woman had plummeted down, I was fed up watching them, and went off to Maltsevsky Market, where, it was said, a knitted shawl had been given to a certain blind man.
That's it?
That's it.
Всё.
That's it.
A documentary about that?
I mean, it's a jumping-off point. He was writing in difficult times.
What's in the suitcase?
The documentary.
The first thing people say after you read the incidents is that Harms has created a new literary genre, the anti-story.
I remember the moment I encountered Daniel Harms for the first time.
Stories that seem to reject all accepted notions of narrative as a way of getting towards a more profound truth about everyday life.
I was at university, somewhere in the Yorkshire Dales.
Erasing the boundary between life and art.
And it slid out of a library shelf.
A man with a long, thin neck crawled into a trunk, closed the cover and began to suffocate.
The book's name was Incidences, a collection of short happenings, occurrences, well, incidences. I liked it immediately. For an afternoon, I buried my nose in its leaves, neglecting my studies and my drinking and losing myself in Harms's words.
How continuous is your life, really? As we go through life, we're constantly creating and recreating narratives about who we are, what we are, why this thing happened to us.
That night, I climbed into my pillow and shut my eyes. All I could see were the old biddies, falling and shattering. Who was this Daniel Harms? How had I survived without him?
Harms to a world that needed to be taken apart and reconstructed in order to not only perceive truth, but create truth. Through the act of creation, you create reality.
As a documentarianist, you worry that this story might not be thick enough to documentarize about. Where Crime and Punishment could be used as a doorstop or weapon, Harms's miniatures are half the length of a bit of paper, more suitable for jotting down a modest shopping list on the reverse. The stuff is meagre in its length. But I'm into it. Yeah.
The meeting.
I'd say I'm into it.
Now, one day, a man went to work, and on the way, he met another man, who, having bought a loaf of Polish bread, was heading back home where he came from. And that's it, more or less.
Well, I'll begin then. Is it Anthony or Tony?
Tony is fine, Tim.
Excellent. Who's Daniel Harms? I'm sat in a room, at a table. On the table is the suitcase, and in the suitcase, everything. Everything I want in my dock. Harms's writings, his published work, his notes, my links, his links. Tapes with interviews, a tape recorder, an actor, an editor, and heaps of love. Now, here's a scrap about his births. Now, I'll tell you how I was born, how I grew, and how the first signs of genius came to light in me.
I was born twice.
The actor.
Here's how it happened.
Daniel Harms survived a life of almost complete deprivation, almost no publication, and yet today he is considered one of the most important Russian writers of the 1920s and 1930s.
It was Papa's desire that I be born without fail upon the new year. Papa calculated that the conception had to take place on the 1st of April, and only on this day would he come around to Mama with the proposition to conceive a child.
He had a public life writing children's poetry. He survived on the money that he made from that. But he basically had his secret life writing these explosive mini-stories.
Nonetheless, all of Papa's calculations collapsed because I turned out to be premature and was born 4 months before I was due. Papa flew into such a rage that the midwife receiving me got flustered and began to cram me back in from where I had just come out.
The thing that I think sells Harms is this wildly surrealistic humor. I mean, he is hilariously funny. And then when you stop laughing, you start thinking, what's going on here? The conventional narrative structures of what we like to call life do not seem to apply in Harms' world.
The experienced doctor examined the mother and shook his head, but nonetheless still kept his wits and gave the mother a good dose of Epsom salts. In this way, I came into the world for a second time.
Daniel Harms, 1905 to 1942. Early Soviet writer of prose miniatures, in which black humour and grotesque violence combine to create a universe in which nothing seems solid, the absurd is the norm, and violence, death and dismemberment are commonplace.
Events. One day, Orlov stuffed himself with mashed peas and died.
Classic Harms. Death, violence. In a funny way. But nonetheless, death and violence. It's dripping with the stuff.
Krylov, having heard the news, also died. And Spiridonov died regardless. And Spiridonov's wife fell from the cupboard and also died. And the Spiridonov children drowned in a pond.
No one's safe. Spiridonov's grandmother. I hate talking over it, but just to say, this is typical.
And Mikhailov stopped combing his hair.
Just doing my job as a documentarianizer, really.
And Kruglov sketched a lady holding a whip and went mad. And Perekyostov received 400 rubles wired over the telegraph and was so uppity about it that he was forced to leave his job. All good people, but they don't know how to hold their ground.
Bam. There it is again. The abrupt ending. Harms loves that. He magics an incident from nothing and, in the midst of his carnage, he walks away. Всё. That's the Russian word. Всё. That's it. That's all. That's your lot. With no warning and no apology, the whole thing's off. And Harms is off.
Now, one day a man went to work and on the way he met another man who, having bought a loaf of Polish bread, was heading back home where he came from. And that's it, more or less. To be honest, I don't really get it.
I don't think I like you being in my documentary.
You've written me into it. My point being, it feels a waste to do something about... Well, he's a curator.
The Radio 4 man didn't think much of my plan to make a documentary about Daniel Harms. He chugged back his sarsens and told me he didn't think there was much of a thirst for it. That my documentary should be about someone like A.A. Milne or Mike Atherton or someone who wrote longer stuff.
That's like claiming you're a weightlifter when all you ever do is lift sponges.
But then a huge lamp fell on him. Crushing him to death, and that was that.
Why do people disintegrate into their constituent parts? Why do people suddenly fall down dead in the middle of the street? Why do things repeat endlessly? Things seem to happen for no reason, and maybe it's the same way in our own lives.
Hi, Alyssa.
Oh,
the BBC's
my goodness.
On the line now.
Oh, fantastic. Hello.
He did some of this sort of stuff.
Hmm.
Then he got arrested and...
For his writing. And put in prison.
He was writing for children and they arrested him, saying that he was putting...
The children arrested him.
I remember the first time I encountered Daniel Harms. I was 9, and an ancient relic presented me a bunch of his incidences. I clapped my hands in delight, so enchanted was I by its peculiar content. Since then I've had many people jam books into my hand and tell me they're funny. Some old cove who wrote in the 1800s. I've read a bit and handed it back cold as ice. But Harms, 1905 to 1942. Harms is different.
One day, Orloff stuffed himself with mashed peas and died.
It's a paid gig. What is wrong with him?
It's funny.
It's like a booby trap, actually. You're reading it and then he keeps stepping on mines.
Noel Fielding is a comedian who waltzes round in clothes made of feathers and splashes out surreal, playful comedy on stage and screen. He bumped into me in a cab one day and scratched at my suitcase. So, this is Andrei Semyonovich. Andrei Semyonovich spat into a cup of water. The water immediately turned black. Andrei Semyonovich screwed up his eyes and looked attentively into the cup. The water was very black. Andrei Semyonovich's heart began to throb.
Suddenly, something big and dark shot past Andrei Semyonovich's face and flew out of the window. This was Andrei Semyonovich's dog flying out, and it zoomed like a crow onto the roof of the building opposite. Andrei Semyonovich sat down on his haunches and began to howl.
There's a level of grotesqueness that remains in Russia.
Progress. We're through to our American lady, Alice Nachimovsky, professor of Russian and Eurasian studies at Colgate University.
I have to tell you, my husband really reads the Russian press. And coincidentally, only about a couple of weeks before you contacted me, he sent me a URL and he said, "This is total Harms. This is from January 9th, 2016.
Yevgeny Bakhtin went to hospital with intestinal pain. He had to have his stomach pumped. And in the middle of the procedure, he landed a blow on nurse Alina Carr. She was diagnosed with concussion, so her colleague Ilya Zelendinov landed a blow on Bakhtin, after which he died."
So if you just added the words, "and that's all there is to it," then that's a piece by Harms, isn't it?
It is, and it's this chain of absurd things. I mean, first of all, somebody goes to the hospital. Fine. He has to have his stomach pumped. Okay. He hits a nurse. How does he do this? And then she gets a concussion and the doctor gets angry and punches him. And then afterwards, the guy drops dead. This is Harms. But I have to tell you that it happened because there are more news stories.
January 18th, 2016. The investigative committee of the Russian Federation is looking into the second death of a patient at Belgorod Hospital No. 2, to have taken place over the last few days. This time, an old man fell out of the window of the hospital's urology wing.
Into the room ran Comrade Popugayev. "What's up with you? Are you ill?" asked Comrade Popugayev. Andrei Semyonovich quietened down and rubbed his eyes with his hands. Comrade Popugayev took a look into the cup which was standing on the table. "What's this you've poured into here?" he asked Andrei Semyonovich. "I don't know," said Andrei Semyonovich. Popugayev instantly disappeared. The dog flew in through the window again, lay down in its former place and went to sleep. Andrei Semyonovich went over to the table and took a drink from the cup of blackened water. And Andrei Semyonovich's soul turned lucent.
He does it every time. His last line is always perfect.
By this point, I'm actually in my suitcase. I've stripped, eaten, and I'm sat with Noel.
His soul turned lucid. It's so beautifully written and each word's considered so perfectly. The dog zoomed like a crow onto the roof of the building opposite. Flew in through the window again, lay down in its former place and went to sleep. It's like chess. He's not making sideways moves or forward moves. He's making conceptual and whimsical leaps, night moves. He's definitely from your
neck of the woods.
Have you made this guy up?
No.
I think I'm in love with you. And this guy.
Daniel Harms, 1905 to 1942. Born Daniel Yuvachev, the author chose his pseudonym, according to contemporaries, to suggest the blend of magical charm and physical harm typical of his life and work. Harms' other pen names include Charms, Dandan, Shardam, Harms Shardam, Karl Ivanovich Schusterling, and some 25 others.
I remember the very first time I encountered Daniel Harms.
The more we began to translate, the more and more Harms came alive in a way that we hadn't seen before. He became a doppelganger.
Well, it barely seems relevant now, but for argument's sake, let's say I was gifted it by a lover I once met in Lisbon, the capital, I believe, of Portugal.
I felt sometimes like he was thinking through me, I was thinking through him.
The more I read, the more I felt a strange attraction to this man's mind. So imagine my delight when a year ago I discovered Harms's notebooks had been translated and conflated into a fat tome, nearly 75 years after his death.
Poetry should be written so that if you throw a poem at the window, the glass will shatter. Spaniards burst into the house and chopped off the top of Andriushka the cook's
Every single
head.
Word must be inevitable.
I'm observing the scary old hags at the hairdresser.
Today I wrote nothing.
Harms basically...
That's not important.
...jotted down whatever was going on in his mind.
I'm afraid of life.
Like mapping his mind out on paper.
Grotesque faces, showing off,
Here you're
giggling,
seeing...
Horrible old bags.
The raw Harms.
A man should not be afraid of his own life.
Harms, I think, had that drive to take the world, his experience, and almost immediately reshape it into words in his art, and that's what the diaries are.
Now I realise I am a phenomenon quite out of the ordinary.
It's moving, going through Holmes's words. It's more like falling in love than reading a book. Peter Scotto and Tony Anemone are the heroes who lovingly assembled this monument from Holmes's hand.
Harms basically conceived of his life as a work of art. When you read the diary, one sees what an amazing effort he had to make to create literary works out of a life of suffering and torment, terror, fear, and often horror.
What can you tell us about Harms as a person?
He cultivated eccentricity in his public appearances. One of his most famous poses is as a kind of Sherlock Holmes character, and he would walk down the street in costume. At a very early age, his desire to write is allied with a desire to be someone else.
Sherlock Holmes was probably the character that he most identified with.
Ah, yes. Matvey Yankelevich.
He liked the sartorial aspects more than the solving of crimes.
Hails from Moscow via Brooklyn. Harms' translator, lover, and disciple.
Harms to him sounded like Holmes, but also had something of the word charm in it. And so he thought of himself as a kind of magician, miracle worker. His eccentricities would come out in small public performances, walking along and suddenly lying down on the street as if he were dead, and then getting up again 5 minutes later after a crowd had gathered, or bringing his own silverware to pubs in a kind of magisterial gesture of nobility at a time when class warfare was rampant.
Do you feel that you have a grey area between what you do in terms of your artistic output and the way you live your life? I've seen your coat.
I think
I was always interested in the
I
image.
Mean, we haven't got time to talk about Noel's coat.
Tesco Metro in a red fur coat and
it is what it is. Let's say that.
Like that all the time. Where does he live? In a boot, in a forest.
And press on.
I don't think one can really talk about who was behind the mask. He was the mask. I think even his eccentric behavior on the street is connected to the interruptions of his stories. He's really writing against the Tolstoyan tradition, big novels with a didactic point to them. He's writing against that because he sees that as having brought on big ideologies that could bring great harm.
Anecdotes from the life of Pushkin.
Oh, I bloody love these.
Number 5. Pushkin spent the summer of 1829 in the country. He would wake up early in the morning, drink a jug of fresh milk, and then run down to the river to bathe. Having bathed in the river, Pushkin lay down in the grass and slept until lunchtime. After lunch, Pushkin went to sleep in the hammock. Upon meeting stinky peasants, Pushkin nodded to them and held his nose with his fingers.
And the stinky peasants would crumple their hats and say, "That's all right."
In the 1970s, Harms was circulating in typescript, samizdat, right? Because Harms was not publishable.
Why was Harms dangerous even in the 70s?
Because there's nothing about him that isn't subversive. All the pillars of Soviet society are being sneered at in Harms.
Wall. How strange. How indescribably strange. That behind the wall, this very wall, there's a man with an angry face sitting on the floor, with his legs stretched out and wearing red boots. If only one could punch a hole in the wall and look inside, one could see right away that this angry man is sitting there. But it's better not to think about him. What is he? Is he not a particle of a dead life that has drifted in from the imaginary void? Whoever he may be, God be with him.
At times the nonsense creaks open, exposing something altogether more sinister behind it.
What are you doing?
Nothing, mate.
Why are you presenting my doc, bro?
Huh?
I'm supposed to be delving into harms here, and yet here you are doing my links.
Well, what's the difference?
It's my commission. You've nothing to do with it.
I'm Daniel Harms.
No, you're an actor reading Harms' words. What's your name, even?
These aren't his words, are they?
No.
So get your facts straight.
I don't love your tone, mate.
It's your script.
Accent, then. I don't love your accent.
I just fancy doing a little documentarianising.
Get out of my suitcase.
Shall I press this?
I would like you to get out of my suitcase, pal.
I think I'll press this.
Stalin himself talked about writers as being engineers of human souls. People like Harms refused to accept this notion of literature. They saw literature not as political ideology, but rather as a kind of mystical power that could change people's lives.
And do you think he was being deliberately subversive? Was his writing just misinterpreted?
Oh, he's not misinterpreted. He knew exactly what he was doing. The question for me is, to what extent was his eccentricity just exactly what he was, and to what extent was he putting it on because he just found everything around him so repellent? And I think, you know, that his choosing this path led inevitably to his arrest and terrible death.
Why have you tied me up?
Oh! I don't want you taking over. I don't know what you're up to.
Just reading your words, you fat lump.
What? Those aren't my words. I should take a good stick to your skull.
If you want my opinion, I was a bit disappointed with the way he died. I found it prosaic.
There was a blockade on. The whole thing was miserable.
Yeah, well, he writes a significantly better death than he dies.
It just ended for him. He was a powerhouse. And they drained the life out of him.
I like the one with the plummeting ladies, one by one shattering on the ground.
Like glass.
You have to laugh, don't you?
You do, yeah. In general, you do. But what a waste.
Shall I read some more of his words?
Yes. Read the red-haired man.
What is the moral of this fable? We thought we had a fable. We are disappointed. Should we be disappointed or should we be thrilled that we don't have the ending that we expected?
Blue Notebook number 10. There was a red-haired man who had no eyes or ears. Neither did he have any hair, so he was called red-haired theoretically. He couldn't speak, since he didn't have a mouth. Neither did he have a nose. He didn't even have any arms or legs. He had no stomach, and he had no back, and he had no spine, and he had no innards whatsoever. He had nothing at all. Therefore, there's no knowing whom we are even talking about. In fact, it's better we don't say any more about him.
In the short period before the Germans encircle Leningrad, Harms speaks to a number of acquaintances and expresses confidence that the Germans will win and things couldn't be any worse under the Nazis than they were under the Soviets. One of his acquaintances went to the secret police and he is immediately arrested.
On one hand, you could read this as a tale of disappearance. Many of his stories are interrupted by a knock on the door or someone being taken away in a car. So yes, they are allusions to some of the violence and disappearance that is happening around him in the late 30s. Yet at the same time, also about narrative, the story becoming nothing before even having become anything.
Tim!
Yes. Have you listened to it?
I'm listening to it now.
Of course you are.
It's quite a fragmented documentary.
He was quite a fragmented man.
I like Harms.
Me too. I mean, I've never been in love, but I...
Would you like some pancakes?
Oh, yes, please.
The last guy didn't really get it, I don't think. And then a lamp fell on him.
Sure.
Is he an influence?
Huh?
Harms, Is he an influence?
I don't know about influence. I think he's my hero.
Are you crying?
I squeezed lemon in my eye.
Never documentarise about your heroes. I learnt that the hard way.
I wish there was a happier ending for him.
We have the protocols of his interrogation by the NKVD, the secret police at this time. Pretty quickly, they decide that he has serious psychological issues, and they send him to a psychiatric prison hospital.
This is how hunger begins. The morning you wake feeling lively. Then begins the weakness. Then begins the boredom. Then comes the loss of the power of quick reason. And then begins the horror.
The city was totally under siege. There was no food for anyone, let alone people in jail. Our best guess is that Harms, he was just forgotten.
Sure.
Then a few months later, Harms' wife and his best friend go to his bombed-out apartment and they scoop up all the writings they can find and stuff them into a suitcase. And that's the last trace we have of him.
That's it.
It breaks my heart. Harms was...
That's it.
There was a red-haired man who had no eyes or ears. Neither did he have any hair, so he was called red-haired, theoretically.
On February the 7th, 1942, Marina Marlich, Harms' wife, made her way through a frozen and starving Leningrad to one of the city's prisons to drop off a packet of food for her husband. The clerk manning the window asked her to wait, and then the window was slammed shut. Several minutes later, it reopened and she was told, died, on the 2nd of February.
He had no spine.
The packet was thrown out back at her.
He had no innards whatsoever. He had nothing at all. Therefore, there's no knowing whom we're even talking about.
Harms' fate was officially confirmed in 1960. His place of burial remains unknown.
In fact, it's better we don't say any more about him.